Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the April 30th General Electric Investor Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. My name is Ellen, and I will be your coordinator for today. If at any time during the call you require assistance, please press star followed by zero, and a conference coordinator will be happy to assist you. If you experience issues with the slides refreshing or there appears to be delays in the slide advancement, please hit F5 on your keyboard to refresh. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the program over to your host for today's conference, Matt Crippens, Vice President of Investor Communications. Please proceed.
Thank you, Ellen. Hello and welcome, everyone. We are pleased to host today's webcast to discuss an exciting update for our company. Regarding the materials for this webcast, we issued the press release this morning, and the presentation slides are available via the webcast. The slides are also available for download and printing on our website at www.ge.com/investor. As always, elements of this presentation are forward-looking and are based on our best view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. Those elements can change as the world changes. Please interpret them in that light. For today's webcast, we have our Chairman and CEO, Jeff Immelt, our Senior Vice President and CFO, Jeff Bornstein, our Senior Vice President Business Development, John Flannery, and our Senior Vice President Power and Water, Steve Bowles. Now I'd like to turn it over to our Chairman and CEO, Jeff Immelt.
Hey, thanks, Matt, and good morning, everyone. The announcement we're making this morning allows us to further our strategy for GE. This transaction reinforces our position as the most competitive infrastructure company with a specialty finance division. Alston brings technology, global capability, and a large installed base to the company. We know the Alston team and business as well and believe they will add to the company's skill set. They have great talent that we can leverage broadly throughout the company. GE can add a lot of value to Alston businesses as a place for our strengths. We can leverage our technology, and while Alston adds some unique elements in grid, project integration, steam, gas, renewables, Alston brings $13 billion of growth market revenue, allowing us to build even more scale in these important regions. Alston adds 35% to our installed base, and they can fully benefit from our investment in analytics. And we believe there are opportunities to capitalize on supply chain and simplification initiatives and improve margins. Importantly, the transaction is financially attractive. We believe this deal will add 8 to 10 cents of earnings per share by 2016 based on a conservative roll-up of synergies. This is a unique opportunity for GE because it complements our business. The returns for GE investors are attractive, and we end up with 75% of our earnings from industrial segments consistent with our strategy. Now, while Alston's markets are largely outside of Europe and France, it does have operating assets in the region. GE has substantial experience and an excellent track record of operating European businesses. In France, TFM is perhaps the world's most successful industrial joint venture in aviation. We have an equally strong track record in France with our healthcare business, and power conversion is just beginning. EGT, which we acquired out of Alstom, was acquired in 1999 and is today a world-class power generation facility. So our experience in France has been excellent. We come at this with a ton of experience. Across Europe, we've had similar success. Nova Pignoni is the foundation of our global oil and gas business. Avio is off to a fantastic start. Similarly, the company has built globally competitive high-tech businesses in Germany, the UK, and the Nordics. So investors should know that we tackle this investment with a great deal of experience. We know how to innovate, drive productivity, and compete in our European-based operations. So now over to John Flannery to describe the deal.
Thanks, Jeff. I'd like to use the next couple of slides to give you a summary of the transaction and its rationale, and then walk you through a high-level view of the assets that we're acquiring. Alstom today is a public company operating in three sectors: power generation, which includes thermal and renewables, an electrical grid business, and a transportation unit. In this transaction, GE will be acquiring the Alstom power and grid businesses only. The purchase price is based upon an enterprise value of $13.5 billion. This price represents 7.9 times pro forma EBITDA for the 12 months ended September 2013. Adjusting for synergies we expect to realize in this transaction, the purchase price is 4.6 times EBITDA. Alstom will remain as a public company and will continue to operate its transportation business. We expect the transaction to close in 2015 after receiving the necessary regulatory and shareholder approvals. In terms of rationale, this is a highly strategic acquisition for GE. The power sector is core to GE's future and has excellent long-term growth prospects. We have an experienced team that knows how to execute the business integration. While many of the Alstom businesses are complementary to GE, we see the integration process generating $1.2 billion in annual synergies by year five. This transaction provides immediate accretion in the range of 4 to 6 cents per share net of costs in the first year. So in summary, this is a highly strategic acquisition in our core industrial portfolio. It generates $4 billion of incremental net income in the first 3 years and delivers attractive returns for our shareholders. We have a strong proposal here, and we expect to reach the finish line with it. In that context, I wanted to elaborate a little bit further on the transaction. In summary, I'd say we have concluded a comprehensive deal negotiation with Alstom and have submitted a binding offer on that basis. Given that the power and grid businesses represent 70% of the company, the transaction replicates a French public company bid. We're pleased to have the unanimous recommendation from the Alstom board and a written undertaking from the largest shareholder, Bouygues, not to sell their shares and to vote their shares in accordance with the board of directors' recommendation. Alstom has formed a special committee of independent directors to review the transaction and incorporate feedback from all stakeholders. Alstom is prohibited from soliciting additional proposals, but its board may consider unsolicited proposals for the power and grid businesses together or Alstom as a whole. This is customary for a French public company transaction. So we believe we've made a compelling offer here, and we're confident of bringing this transaction, as announced, to close in 2015. This is a little more detail on what we are buying. These are good assets featuring complementary technologies and a large installed base across the globe. In some cases, Alstom has lacked the scale necessary to take full advantage of these assets. If you look in the lower left, the power business constitutes about $15 billion or 75% of the revenues, and it consists of a core thermal business and a growing renewables arm. The thermal business is anchored by the services flow off of the large installed base. This is about 50% of the revenue with good visibility, and it is recurring in nature. The company also has a solid position in coal and nuclear steam and a small position in gas turbines. The renewables business features a leading profitable position in hydro and an onshore and offshore wind business. The grid business accounts for the other 25% with revenues of $5 billion. This business offers a wide range of transmission and distribution products and solutions to support the build-out of the grid in emerging economies and the replacement of aging electrical infrastructure. Approximately 75% of the grid business is focused on AC technology solutions and services, with the remaining 25% focused in fast-growing HVDC power electronics and grid automation solutions. The numbers on the right give some insight into the diversity and stability of Alstom's revenue. There's significant geographic diversity. Over 85% of the revenues come from outside North America, and over 80% of total revenues come from outside of Western Europe. The sizable service revenue stream and $38 billion backlog provide support for future revenues. Employment is also diversified, with about 65,000 total employees, about 14% of whom are based in France. So overall, these are businesses we know well with very good diversification. And I'll turn it over to Steve Bowles.
Thanks, John. As Jeff and John said, we really like this business. It complements us in both geography and technology. It's a broad power generation and infrastructure company in spaces we know well. When we look at the power sector, everyone in the world needs accessible, affordable, and sustainable power. Alstom is a strong platform that will help us meet the needs of our customers even better. There are many things that we like about Alstom, and I want to touch on 10 of them on this page and then discuss how Alstom complements and improves our business. First, Alstom has a broad service business with a substantial installed base, including 350 gigawatts of thermal installed base. Second, Alstom has $38 billion of backlog, with a large portion being services. This gives us significant visibility on revenues. Alstom has a strong customer set of relationships and JV partners around the world that complement our regional strengths. Fourth, it has leading steam turbine and balance of plant technology that is broadly recognized as world class. This will make our combined cycle power plant offering better, converting fuel to electricity more efficiently. These technologies will also allow us to address the global fossil and nuclear steam segments where we are largely absent today. Alstom also offers us complementary renewables platform. At GE, we talk about renewables. When we talk about that, we really focus on wind. Alstom brings a leading 1.4 billion euro global hydro player, and their wind business, including offshore, complements ours. Alstom also has a broad high-voltage grid business with complementary AC and DC technology solutions, offshore transmission expertise, and grid management solutions that will allow us to be more competitive with market leaders, including Siemens and ABB. Seven, Alstom brings total combined cycle power plant design and project execution capability. Alstom has demonstrated strong project execution capability for both power and grid. Alstom has over $10 billion of revenue in emerging markets with many established local facilities and capabilities. Nine, we really like Alstom's leadership team. They are a team that we have competed against in some areas and who have impressed us during this process. We will be excited to have them join GE when the acquisition is completed. Finally, there are opportunities to improve our combined performance by selectively addressing overlapping global structure and redeploying resources to increase efficiency. Overall, there are many things we like about Alstom, but most of all, we like Alstom's fit with our strategy to serve the world's power needs. Electricity demand is expected to grow 50% by 2030, and 65% of that power comes from centralized generation with additional investment in grid infrastructure required. This is why we like Alstom. Now, let me talk about how we're better together and how this deal will improve our power and water franchise. First, Alstom improves our combined services capability, bringing expanded scope to the installed base. Again, it increases our thermal installed base by 35% around the world. GE's investments in analytics and service technology will expand the customer offering and improve customer outcomes with more output, efficiency, and lower and extended lifecycle costs for existing assets. Second, we will improve our gas turbine competitiveness through optimized overall plant performance. There was a global customer trend now to offer full project solutions. This transaction will allow us to match GE's gas capabilities with Alstom's steam and balance of plant capabilities. This combined approach will allow us to provide customers with better solutions for cost and efficiency. Third, Alstom will expand our renewables footprint by adding a leading hydro business and a complementary wind business. When teamed with GE's business, we will have a broad set of renewables technologies to meet the ongoing demand in the world. Fourth, Alstom will enhance our emerging market capability as we have complementary geographies. It will add over $10 billion of revenue in growth markets, including India, China, Brazil, and the Middle East. Lastly, we see clear synergies from improving the cost structure. We will be able to optimize our businesses to maximize efficiencies in supply chain, sourcing, and SG&A. We will be able to redeploy R&D more effectively. As a result, we will be able to create a more valuable enterprise that offers customers greater value through better product solutions and services. Now let's talk about two areas of value creation, starting with services. As you know, service growth is a core GE strategy. GE Power and Water has $25 billion of total revenue in 2013, of which about half is from services with attractive margins. We have 1,000 gigawatts of installed base, and over half of which is gas, and a service backlog of $40 billion. So why do we win today? As many of you know, the key to the ongoing service growth starts with winning products that drive installed base growth. Then you need to have local capabilities to support customers, which we do through a broad service network today. We deliver the best customer outcomes through our Service 2.0 model that builds on our strong CSA model, our strengths in material science, and our investments in software and analytics. Alstom will allow us to expand our service offering and create more value for customers globally. Alstom has a broad service business with 350 gigawatts of thermal installed base spread all over the world. The mix is more towards steam than gas, but still with attractive margins and opportunities for improvements and upgrades. Alstom has a good footprint both for servicing its own equipment and that for other OEMs. We see exciting opportunities to apply our CSA model to their customer base and deploy our software and analytics investment across their installed base to improve customer efficiency. In addition, with the global footprint of services infrastructure, there will be opportunities for combined scale for productivity. In sum, Alstom's $14 billion of services backlog provides a clear opportunity to apply GE's service model to improve customer outcomes and generate value. Now, the second big area of opportunity is the expanded power plant scope. By combining GE's gas turbine technology with Alstom's steam turbine and balance of plant technology, we will be able to help customers achieve more performance from their existing and new power plants. More efficiency in converting fuel to electricity in large centralized power plants enables more accessible, affordable, and sustainable power for people everywhere. As I mentioned earlier, there is a global customer trend now to offer full project solutions. Over 70% of future gas turbine purchases will be part of a combined cycle power plant. By optimizing the total cycle, we can continue to improve total plant performance and our cost competitiveness. Also, additional scope like heat recovery steam generators and more steam turbines drive incremental revenues and margins, and provide more service scope potential. Overall, this improves our competitiveness and provides better solutions and more value for our customers. So let's now look at the new Power and Water once the acquisition is completed. We will be a $43 billion pro forma revenue business with clear global competitive advantages. Alstom enhances our technology position. Its large installed base provides a tremendous opportunity to extend our service model and deliver better customer outcomes. It expands our global reach and deepens our presence in emerging markets. And finally, the attractive synergies in this deal position us for double-digit profit growth. We will have a thermal business with $24 billion of revenues. We will have a broad portfolio in renewables with $10 billion of revenue spread across hydro and wind, including offshore. Distributed power remains $6 billion, and nuclear and water would be about $3 billion. Across these global platforms, there would be $19 billion of embedded services. This transaction enhances a great business with attractive returns that we are very excited about. I'll turn it back to John Flanagan.
Thanks, Steve. Alstom Grid is a business that we know well.
Having looked at this back in 2009, on the left-hand side here, you have a look at the combination of Alstom's grid business with the digital energy business we have inside of our energy management segment. Alstom brings a full portfolio of high-voltage products and solutions, as well as leading substation automation, network management, and power electronics smart grid solutions. As we mentioned earlier, it's a $5 billion business with approximately 18,000 employees. Altum Grid greatly enhances the scale of our digital energy offering, and the combined business quadruples the size of our digital energy business with a much broader global footprint. On the right, there's clear potential for value creation in this combination. While GE and Alstom businesses earn single-digit profit margins on a standalone basis, the leaders in the industry earn solid double-digit margins. Alstom has a broader product portfolio and significant project management skills, while GE has a strong industrial market channel and good data analytics capability. Our focus will be to combine the strengths of the two entities to create a business with better scale and synergies. So with good execution, we see meaningful upside here from our current position. And now I'd like to turn it over to our CFO, Jeff Bornstein.
Thanks, John. I'll walk through our view of synergies. We think it's balanced, relatively conservative, and it's cost-focused. We see about $300 million in year one of synergies growing to about $1.2 billion in year five, and we expect to realize 80% of the $1.2 billion of synergies by the third year. On the right side of the page, we see four main categories that drive our synergies. The first is optimizing the manufacturing and service footprints. The combined businesses have 16 major manufacturing sites and many more feeder sites, and about 70 service sites across the globe. We estimate roughly $400 million of savings here over the period. Second, leveraging the combined sourcing buy to increase productivity, we have approximately $5 billion of common spend that we believe we can realize about 5% savings on. This is very consistent with our experience when we bought EGT from Alstom in 1999. The third area is combining our R&D efforts across the product lines. We would optimize GE's gas turbine programs and Alstom's steam expertise to deliver $300 million of synergies between us. And then lastly, by consolidating supporting functions across SG&A, we see the ability to get about 10% synergy across the combined businesses. We expect to spend approximately $900 million over the first 5 years to realize the $1.2 billion of cost savings. Beyond the $1.2 billion, we have modest revenue synergies assumed with the potential for much more upside. We will run a highly disciplined process to ensure synergy realization, and the team that's executing this is highly experienced, and we have a track record of driving competitiveness and realizing synergies in Europe. This will be a significant focus of mine, and we'll provide investors with regular updates on our progress. So if we flip to the next page, I'll walk through the deal assumptions and funding, some of which John covered. Starting on the top left, the enterprise value of the transaction is $13.5 billion, $17 billion headline price, less $3.4 billion of cash. That equates to 7.9 times trailing 12 months EBITDA multiple for the period ending September 2013. On a fully synergized basis, the EBITDA multiple is 4.6 times. The transaction is very attractive to us financially with a high teens IRR, well in excess of our cost of capital. We expect to achieve our hurdle rate in year three. The valuation is built on modest revenue growth, conservative working capital assumptions, and cost synergies that we believe are highly achievable. On the right side of the page is how we'll fund the transaction. We'll fund $9.5 billion from cash, and we'll borrow $4 billion. The new debt will be paid down over 5 years, and we'll assume $3.4 billion of operating cash and have a lockbox structure in place effective April 1st of this year through closing. So no cash will leave the business over that period of time. Again, we think the quality of the assets and the available synergies drive a very attractive return profile for investors. On the next page, I'll walk through the implications on capital allocation. To start, there's no change to the capital allocation strategy we've shared with you. You know, dividends remain our number one priority for investors going forward, and we expect them to continue to grow in line with earnings. The transaction does effectively complete the allocation we've made for 14 and 15 for M&A. We do expect on buyback for both 2014 and 15 that we will limit the buyback to employee plan dilution. And we still believe that the retail finance split off achieves our buyback goals that we've shared with investors of 9 to 9.5 billion shares in 2015. We will have $4 billion increase in leverage We think that's more than supported by the Alstom cash flows, and that will be paid down, as I said on the previous page, over 5 years. We will delever that back. And then we'll be very aggressively working on non-strategic pieces of our portfolio. We shared with you on the earnings call that we're targeting $4 billion plus of dispositions, and we will run after that quite aggressively. So in total, the strategy is unchanged, capital allocation, financial policy is unchanged, and we're increasingly focusing on shareholder value. So with that, I'll turn it back to Jeff.
Great, Jeff. Thanks. And let me just close with a few thoughts. This transaction is in line with our strategy for businesses we know and like and really leverages GE's strengths. This is always tough execution, but we think it really is playing to our strengths. It improves our position in both the power and grid businesses. We really believe that we have the capability to achieve the synergies and manage the business for the long term. The investment will achieve a good return and increase the company's growth rate. And we plan to put our best people on the execution. So we view this as a strategic opportunity for GE. I would also say that you've got a very established leadership team and experienced leadership team in terms of dealing with the M&A market in Europe and how to operate in Europe. And so we bring a ton of experience as we begin this journey. Lastly, I would say that we announced this transaction at a time when the company is executing extremely well. We feel good about our organic growth and margin targets and how we're positioned to deliver for investors in 2014 and beyond. So we think on that strong foundation, we're adding this acquisition to add even more momentum to the company. So, Matt, let's turn it over to you and take some questions.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Jeff. Jeff, John, and Steve. Ellen, why don't we open up for questions?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press the pound sign or hash key. Our first question is from Scott Davis with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning,
hey,
guys. And,
hey, Scott.
I know this hasn't, you're not over the goal line, but congrats at least preliminarily and getting this going. It looks interesting. But, guys, I want to address one of the pieces of pushback we're going to get on this is that you're essentially getting back into some businesses that you had strategically exited over the last, 10-plus years. And, that, you know, help us understand if that's, if there's a, you know, I guess part of the question is there a plan to potentially down the road, sell some of those things off and stick to that, or you've had a bit of a change of thought that some of those businesses like hydro, for example, are things that actually make sense for you to be in?
You know, Scott, this is Steve. When you think about the hydro business, the one we exited was subscale, and these guys' business is really world-class. They're number one in the space, and when you think about the steam coal plant space, you look at power generation in the world today, coal-fired power is one of the major ones and will be for many, many years. And this is a business area that we have focused more of our investment in the gas turbine. With us together, you're going to have a better combined cycle plant business, but also with those coal plants, it still is a very big business going forward, as well as very strong service potential. So as we look at it, it really allows us to broaden out and to make both assets better.
Okay.
Scott, I'd add just a way to think about it in my mind, just from a risk management standpoint. I think the installed base is extremely attractive and stuff we know how to do. I think I would always start with that. I would say that's one of the company's core competencies for sure. I think the growth market aspect of this makes GE almost a $60 billion player in growth markets, and that scale is extraordinary and very helpful. I'm going from here to India. You know, the Alstom presence in India is quite compelling, and we can build on that. And then I would say the equipment is all stuff we know, and we think the combination will make stronger. And over time, you know, my expectation is still very disciplined around the margin expectations we have for all of our businesses, and we're going to be very discerning to see that we can achieve the kind of expectations and these products that we're buying that we expect for the company. But the install base gives it a great foundation.
Yeah, understand. And I just wanted to, Jeff, go back to slide two. Your first bullet says transaction enhances GE's position as the most competitive infrastructure company with a specialty finance financial services business. I've never actually heard GE talk about GE Capital as a specialty finance business, and that it almost implies substantially smaller, more niche. Can you clarify what you mean by that?
You know, Scott, I've used that phraseology, you know, pretty generally over time. And look, our focus on GE Capital remains to be tough-minded about the businesses that we should be in, that we can generate great returns and build competitive advantage. And so, you know, you've seen what we've done in retail finance, and we'll continue to be focused on the places in financial services where we can generate a good return.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, would you define a specialty finance business as one that is as broad as you have? And so, you know,
again, I think it's just semantics, Scott, for right now.
Okay.
I really would. I'm not meaning to signal anything
okay.
Internally.
No, I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to pick at how you get down to that 25% of even with this accretion, I still have it at higher than that. So I'm trying to figure out how you get there. But anyways, it doesn't matter. We can cover that offline. I'll pass on to the next guy.
Great. Thanks, Scott.
The next question is from Stephen Winokur with Sanford Bernstein.
Thanks and good morning. Hey, so just one minor technical thing. The Alstom presentation, I guess on page 7, their presentation this morning listed an enterprise value of 11.4 billion euros, and on my math at 1.39, that's $15.8 billion. It's March 31st timing, and you guys are at 13.5 billion. Just help me bridge those.
Yeah, Steve. Two things. One is they've sold the business called their preheater business that's contractually sold and will settle for cash here shortly. We include that in our $3.4 billion of cash because that's what we'll close on. I think they also included in their enterprise value the pension deficit, among other items that they tend to talk about in Europe. So ours is very simply, you know, what the change in cash is going to be. Our cash is going to go down. Our checking account will go down by $13.5 billion. This will go up by $13.5 billion at closing.
Okay, and you absorb their pension and all of that, though, right?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
And what about the, I think I'd heard previously about something like $3 billion of customer advances, and maybe just talk through kind of the reps, warranties, how you're thinking about that, and some of their risks they've identified previously, whether it's fines and just accounting. I know you guys are it sounds like you're well through some of the diligence. Just give us a comfort level about the absorption of risks here.
This is John Flannery. We did due diligence on the company over the last several weeks, a heavy due diligence. The structure of the transaction, we said earlier, is a public company type structure. So it's a fixed price. Effective essentially April 1st of 2014. Jeff referenced the lockbox earlier. So we have the totality of the business from April 1st, 2014 going forward. We've analyzed some of those risks that you mentioned, the working capital and other liability positions, and have incorporated that into our modeling of the transaction.
Oh, okay. On the service synergy, on the service side, if we look at that business, the installed base, and just where you might take that margin on that business, do you think this can get to a, you know, would you expect to approach, if not GE margin levels in service, you know, 10, 15, I mean, how what's the ambition there in this time frame as part of your calculations?
What I'd say, this is Steve, as I mentioned earlier, their installed base adds about 35% to ours, and as you grow a service business, the number one thing you need is installed base. As we look at their margin rates versus ours, they're comparatively lower. Some of that's because it's more towards the steam mix shift. But I'd say is we've modeled some of that accretion going forward in applying our CSA model and some of the scope synergies we have. But I'd say we have a moderate assumption for that in our synergy model.
But would you assume like that the ROS on that service business would be double digit?
Yes.
Okay.
And sorry, just a couple more here, just because this is so huge. On the cost synergy front also, you've walked through those elements. The French, are there a set of constraints that have already been placed on you in the deal that are guiding that synergy? In other words, how are you achieving the plant and operational synergies at all?
Steve, this is not our first deal in France or our first deal in Europe. So I think we as we modeled synergies, we had a pretty good perspective on what we had to do. That's point number one. Point number two is, look, these guys have a massive global footprint that is primarily outside of France. So there's a ton of things that can be done really around the world as we look at it. And as Jeff said, we have a funnel of synergy opportunities that's far in excess of what we have on this page. So we have we have additional opportunities that we're not counting on as we drive towards execution. So I think we've pretty well underwritten how we view the synergy case.
Okay, I'll get back in queue. Thanks, Jeff.
The next question comes from Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, Steve. Hi, good morning. It's Drew Pearson on for Steve. I wanted to start with a quick clarification on slide 13. There's a $900 million number by year five. Is that a restructuring investment type of number to drive the cost synergy, or is that a cost out number?
No, that's a cost to achieve the synergy number. That's an investment.
Right.
Restructuring
okay.
investment. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And then lastly, so Alstom has an internal productivity plan. They've talked about, something well north of €1 billion. When you think about, your opportunities, is that something that would be incremental to that? How do you think about sort of absorbing their best practices and their internal plans in addition to yours?
Yeah, so we've, as part of this underwriting, we've gone through and looked at how they thought about things and now how we're thinking about things. They don't necessarily completely overlap because we're playing with a much bigger pie now when we think about our footprint plus their footprint. So, we're going to emphasize things that maybe they wouldn't. We're going to invest in areas that may be slightly different than how they would have thought about it. So there's not a complete overlap there. But I think we feel very good about the achievability of our synergy assumptions and the time frame with which we can realize them.
And some of these synergies are going to be on the GE side as well.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks for the detail. Appreciate it.
Great.
The next question is from Jeff Sprague with Vertical Research.
Thank you.
Hey,
good morning.
Hey,
good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks. Just a couple other questions to maybe put a finer point on some of these other items. So the cash that is included that's coming in with the deal, how much of that is customer deposits or maybe somehow, restricted in a sense?
No, we don't, Jeff, we don't think there's a big content of restrict. There's a small amount of this cash that's in JVs. In many places around the world, but for the most part, we don't think much of this cash is encumbered.
Okay.
They're in operating entities and subsidiaries, like our cash in many cases is, that allow these businesses to run in the geographies they're in.
And the pension, according to the Alstom slides, looks like you're taking about $1.2 billion. Is there anything else on kind of defined liabilities that come across?
No, that's the only liability of substance that comes across beyond our underwriting of some of the compliance risks that were asked about earlier.
Right. Do you have a placeholder on those? I mean, you must assume there's some.
Yeah. So Jeff, we've underwritten those compliance items, taking a look at what we think they value themselves at. We've built that into the model, and they're reflected in the returns and the EPS numbers that you see.
So if you take those would go through the P&L and not be excluded as kind of one-off items?
Oh, I don't know. They're in the economics of everything we've shown you. We've not pulled this apart and said this piece will show up in corporate, this one will show up in the business. What you see right now are the full standalone economics and earnings associated with this acquisition.
And then just finally, just on their backlog, obviously you've spent some time going through that also. I mean, should we expect any, backlog revaluation or anything upon close? Your price to them doesn't change, but is there a change in how the backlog gets valued as part of the deal account?
You know, Jeff, we took a hard look at the backlog, as you would expect, as we went through due diligence. A sizable chunk of that was services, and we also looked at their experience on the margins on the backlog. At this point, we have we're pretty comfortable with it, and we have those again those assumptions built into the model. So those are captured with the financials you see here.
Yeah, I would just add that, you know, in our work going through the backlog, the margins in the backlog are consistent with what Alsem has been producing.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks. See you. Thanks.
The next question is from John Inch with Deutsche Bank.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, John.
Good morning, guys. Steve, you mentioned you've been doing diligence for several weeks in Alsem. Presumably, you've been looking at this transaction or the prospects of this before. Is there something that prompted this that maybe seems obvious that I'm kind of missing here in terms of what was the genesis of ultimately beginning to pursue this? If there's anything you can speak to on that front.
You know, John, I just think, you know, we had a dialogue with the leadership team probably in mid-February, you know, to express interest. The diligence really took place over the last, you know, 3 weeks or so, I'd say, at most. I think Alsem, you know, viewed their world as not really being an immediate issue. But I think the thinking inside Alsem was, over the medium and long term, did they really have the scale and reach to do all the things that you had to do to be successful in the global energy business? So, you know, it's a company that we've known well for a long time. They reached out to us in mid-February, let's say, and we did diligence in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, again, I think it just those pieces fit together, and I just think it's a classic case of, you know, our R&D services, the things we can do. I think it allows us to add value to the platform that they already have in place.
The only thing I'd add, John, is it's clearly been we've been tracking this for a long time, like we always assess the marketplace. What I would say back to what I said earlier, it's complementary technology and complementary geography, particularly technology with some areas that we steam. Total power plant, balance of plant with strength in our combined cycle puts us very big in coal plants. And as far as the installed base, it's really a big opportunity to expand, and the opportunity was right.
Yeah, and cyclically, certainly the timing seems really good.
You're exactly right there in terms of the time. You know, this is a long cycle business. It goes through its cycles, and I think we're at a good point in the cycle for this kind of investment.
Yeah. So if I look at Alsem's, you know, historical financials, I mean, the returns certainly at the operating profit level have been single digit really for many years. What, given the fact that there is a complementary versus overlapping nature of the assets, I mean, how soon do you think? I think, Steve, you mentioned you thought the grid businesses could become double-digit margins. I mean, what's sort of the timing if all of this kind of works to begin to drive these margins higher? And, you know, to the double-digit level, and how confident really are you that that can be achieved, that there won't be other things that structurally maybe prevent that?
Well, I would start, John, with service. Yep. And I think in service, this is, you know, the technology is complementary, but the framework is common. And, you know, the things you can do with repair technology and structure in the field, training. So I think that's probably the most straightforward thing to do, and you can get there the fastest. And then on the product side, I think it's really loaded into the synergies, the ability to drive a leaner cost structure, less SG&A. Those things, I think, build over the 5 years and start relatively quickly.
Yeah, I would just add, you know, when you think about that, they can be complementary and still get a lot of synergy. So we don't need to invest at the same levels we have historically in steam technology. They've got great steam technology. They don't need to invest at the levels they've been investing at, gas turbine, because that's where our center of excellence is. Jeff mentioned the SG&A and the footprint. So I mentioned earlier, there are 16 major manufacturing sites across the globe, many, many more times that are feeder plants, more than 70 service sites across. All those are available to put together and do on a smarter basis, more cost-effective basis. So I wouldn't read into the fact that the products and markets are complementary in any way, shape, or form limits our ability to realize synergies and value.
I would also say on the grid standpoint, you know, John, and grid, I would say that's a place where, you know, 1 + 1 = 3. You've got Siemens and ABB that are leaders in that market, and I think the combination of Alstom and GE allows us to operate at more of a scale base to those guys versus what either one of us have been able to do on our own.
Just one other one I'd reinforce, and Jeff Hornstein mentioned earlier, sourcing. A big part of the cost structure is sourcing. Over $5 billion of common buy, and our experience from the European gas turbine Alstom acquisition in the GE, we got, you know, real benefits fairly quickly. So those are some areas we'll dig into.
Mm-hmm. And then just lastly, of the, I guess, Alstom 65,000 employees, 14,000 in France, just over 9,000. How many employees are in Europe, and what portion of the asset base of the company would be French or in Europe?
Just, John, so just one correction. The 14,000 includes transport. So
okay.
if you just look at the businesses that we're doing, it's like 9,000-ish, that kind of number.
Right.
And in Europe, I don't know if you know that number. Do we, guys?
Yeah, about 27,000 employees Europe-wide, 9,000 in France, as you said.
Yeah.
Of the 65,000 total employees.
Yeah. I go back to, though, John, you know, Nova Pignone, Avio, the original deals we've done in Europe. These all had asset bases in Europe that over time we've been able to make highly competitive on a global basis. And our expectation is that we can do the same thing here based on a lot of experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, I do ask that you limit yourself to one question. The next question comes from Nigel Coe with Morgan Stanley.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Nigel.
So you get one question?
Yeah. Nice try.
Okay. So I thought the data point about 70% of gas turbines will be, you know, part of a wider solution. And I'm wondering, you know, how prevalent is that trend today? And I'm wondering, have you, you know, lost out on contracts because you don't have the, you know, the EPC capability or the transmission capability? And how important is the grid business in that equation?
Nigel, let me start with the first one. And I mentioned 70% of the total combined cycle power plant purchases going forward. Customers are looking at a total power plant level. Today, we, GE, haven't been losing parts of that. We work in partnership with, let's say, some of the boiler providers, HRSG, and other EPC partners. The opportunity with Alstom is to bring that capability in-house. So not only do we have more scope, more margin potential, more service potential, but, Nigel, as we look at it, as you look at the total power plant cycle, let's say you want a combined cycle power plant north of 60% efficient, you got to be able to work on all elements of the cycle so we can tweak and improve that total cycle.
And I would say, just to add to what Steve said, the lack of what I would call a broadly competitive grid capability in many cases has been an undersold opportunity for GE, and we think that's kind of an easy one. And the last thing I think is just the, you know, as Steve grows the gas turbine business, the bottoming cycle capability, just having a little bit more of that capability, I think, is good for margins and gives us even more of a technology advantage, I think, in the marketplace. So I view that as helping our combined cycle operation as well.
Okay. And a quick follow-on. You know, you currently have JVs with XD and Prolec in the transmission business right now. How do those JVs fit in with this proposal to acquire Alstom? I mean, do you see them as complementary, or is it too early to decide?
This is John. We view those as complementary. The XD joint venture was founded on a vision to broaden the global capability in transmission and distribution, and we think this accelerates that basic thesis.
The The next question comes from Deane Dray with Citi.
Thank you. Hey, good morning, everyone. Hey, you've put together this morning a pretty compelling case on this transaction, both strategically and for accretion. What I'd like to do is shift the conversation a bit to see how this deal fits into the current GE playbook and framework. And I'll start with the 75-25 mix. The target had been 70-30. You overshoot a bit. Does that change what you consider to be the optimal mix, or does it just give you some flexibility with some potential divestitures that you've also signaled here this morning?
Yeah, Dean, here's what I'd say. Over time, I want industrial to be bigger, and I would say this gives us an opportunity to reset the bar at 75-25. And, you know, when we think about GE Capital, I think we've got good opportunities for growth there, but we always are going to look at that on our own terms in terms of how we look at the financial service portfolio. But I think this gives us a chance to reset the bar and do it in a very profitable way.
And then just related to this, the simplification initiatives and the combination of buybacks were to offset the dilution for the consumer finance spin. Now you're pulling back on what might be discretionary buybacks. Does that change any of the target of having all of the consumer finance dilution offset for next year?
No change in the framework that we've shared with you. There's a very marginal impact on how we think about EPS as a result of, you know, just sticking with employee dilution, but we're in no way changes materially how we think about the framework that we've given you for 14 or 15.
But, this thing's got to go through a process, and I think as John Flannery said earlier, we're thinking, you know, 15 close or something like that. But our EPS should be higher in 15 and 16 as we complete this transaction. You know, that's clear.
The next question is from Julian Mitchell with Credit Suisse.
Hi, thank you. In the past, you've sounded fairly reticent about making a big push into, you know, steam turbine manufacturing or balance of plant work because of the competitive landscape. So I wondered, when you're looking at, you know, Alstom's business in those areas, you know, the company today has a gross margin, I guess, of sort of just under 20%. You know, outside of cost synergies, what is it you think you can bring that's different in terms of maybe project discipline, and those sorts of factors that you think can make actually that business attractive from a margin and competitive standpoint?
Julian, I want to go back to one of the big opportunities we see is they do start with a very large steam installed base around the world, which can be expanded, and we obviously have one too, but how do we've modeled out how we do that going forward and apply the GE model. I think the other side is, as was mentioned earlier, as you have steam capability, which is bottoming cycle on a combined cycle plant and balance of plant, that's going to allow us to now look more at optimizing the whole cycle, as I mentioned earlier, go to above 60%. And that's an opportunity we really see going forward. And it's going to allow us to pick up more scope, win more. And the service potential is just the long-term serviceability, which we know how to model in.
The nuclear steam business, Julian, is also pretty high margin and pretty attractive. So I think when Steve and I look at this, you've got the opportunities for combined cycle. You've got the nuclear steam turbine business, which is pretty attractive. And then the opportunity to drive global reach and technology where we can and where we need to in a competitive steam turbine business, but one where Alstom has a good competitive position.
Thanks. And then on slide 14, I think you talk about modest revenue growth expectations. Could you give any detail on that, or in any big shifts in terms of within the Alstom portfolio, you know, grid versus hydro versus nuclear steam or whatever, where you think the most attractive growth should come?
Well, as I said earlier, our growth expectations on the revenue line are pretty modest. We're really underwriting this transaction on the ability to get cost and technology. We do see some growth in both the renewables portfolio as you'd expect, that's been growing at a reasonable clip globally, and we see some growth in the grid book as well, and some modest growth in the steam business. But again, we try to really underwrite the economics here by focusing on what we control and what we execute, and not relying on a big bet on revenue and market growth.
The next question is from Shannon O'Callaghan with Nomura Securities.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Shannon.
Hey, you know, are there any particular areas, you know, within Alstom that you think, you know, we're under growing because of, you know, lack of investment? And I guess just also maybe on that topic, you know, what do you think of their gas turbine technology in terms of what it can bring to what you already do there?
You know, what I would say is that it's a broad portfolio. They have some good gas turbine technology, by the way, one of which is they have some very good things in the combustion area. But I'd say is GE's clearly much bigger there, and together we can take that more to scale. They've invested more on the steam turbine side. We look at total combined cycle power plants. That's something that, Shannon, we can do much more better together. So when I say complementary technology, that's one that makes very clear, and we model that in our plans for growth.
Again, I go back to service. I think the dollars per installed base, the ability to add analytics and controls, upgrades, there's a ton that we can bring as it pertains to a service. And then geography, position Middle East and some of the other parts of the world, I think that's going to give us a very strong combined competitive advantage.
Okay, and then just, you know, overall for the GE balance sheet, I mean, so this, you know, it looks like you've sort of reached your comfort level of what kind of leverage you're willing to take on. I mean, is that pretty hard and fast, or is there flex?
I think that based on what we did earlier in the first quarter and what we anticipate doing as part of this acquisition and closing, I think, you know, we're where we probably ought to be from a leverage perspective. I don't expect us to add any leverage from this point.
The thing I would add to what Jeff just said is this is one big acquisition, but with a lot of pieces that I think over time add additional strategic optionality as time goes on.
Why don't we take one more question, please?
And the last question for today comes from Brian Langenberg with Langenberg & Company.
Good morning, gentlemen. You're having a great time shopping. Great. Hey, listen, just to want to bore into Europe a little bit, 14% of the employment base is in France, and about 30% of the installed base is Europe. Can we split that European installed base between France, Germany, Italy, and everything else? And then I have a couple small follow-ups on this.
I'm not sure that we can split it that finely. Can we get back to you on that one, and we can follow up and let you ask other questions on that one. Okay, Brian?
That's perfect. I'll follow up after. And then is the CSA model as prevalent and penetrated in Europe as it is in the rest of the world?
I'd say the answer to that one, Brian, is yes. I'd say it's more prevalent in the gas side than the steam side. But I'd say is if you broaden it up to not just contractual but a multi-year agreement like, that applies globally. So, okay. So you can apply that to existing installed base as well as new power plant purchases.
Okay.
Go ahead, Brian.
I'd like to hear what you were going to say, please.
No, I was going to say look, we have no assumption in doing this deal that the European power market is going to get markedly better than where it is today. I think this continues to be a tough market, but we're still quite encouraged by the power markets in, you know, North America, we feel like is getting better. Africa, Middle East continues to be strong. We see good prospects still in Africa, not just for our business, but for the Alstom business as well. So that's. I just wanted to give you a little context that we're not assuming that magically the European power market gets markedly better in the short term.
And Mr. Cribbins, do you have any additional remarks?
Thank you. A couple of quick announcements. The replay of today's webcast will be available later today on our website. As a reminder, on Wednesday, May 21st, Jeff Immelt will present at the 2014 EPG conference. Also, our second quarter 2014 earnings webcast will be on Friday, July 18th. As always, we'll be available today to take questions. Thank you.
This concludes your conference call. Thank you for your participation today. You may now disconnect.